Oral history recording at Westminster School on the 12th of April 2016 with Elizabeth Wells, archivist.
Tom Edlin, history master and Old Westminster.
Tristram Jones Parry, Old Westminster and ex-headmaster.
Tristram, I wonder if we could start by asking you about your time here as a boy. Of course, when you arrived, you already had a brother in the school.
I did.
And you followed him to Wrens.
Absolutely.
Was it always sort of ordained that you would be coming to Westminster?
I don't think anything is ordained, but I went to Westminster under school, and certainly in those days, as still now, a large number of the pupils from Westminster under school moved on here to Westminster School, and it was a day school in the centre of London, obviously boarding as well, but we lived very close in South Kensington, so I was a day boy. It was a fantastic time. Didn't last here very long, because in those days you were accelerated incredibly quickly, and I did O-levels after 1 year, and A-levels in another 2 years, and then the Oxbridge term after that, and I left.
People sometimes say that it was a sort of narrower experience because you specialised so young. But I remember you said once you studied English as well, so you weren't narrowly maths and science at all.
No, after I finished my O-levels, I had to consider very strongly what subjects I did at A-level. I was interested in, amazingly, Latin, but I decided even then that maths was much more likely to get me a job. So I did maths and double maths, as it was called then, and physics and English to keep me going. Which I enjoyed very much.
Can you tell us something about your most memorable teachers at that time?
There's somebody called Adolf Prague, who was a man who'd come from Germany during just before the opening of the Second World War, and he was just the most inspiring maths teacher you could possibly imagine. I mean, he was just wonderful. The English teacher that I had, which I really admired, was someone called Stephen Lushington, who was housemaster at Little's and then left. But those two, I think, were particularly the ones that really inspired me. They were fantastic teachers.
Yeah. And tell us about your time in Wrens, in the house. Who was your housemaster?
An amazing man called Charles Keeley, who was a historian. Difficult to get to know, really, but I'm told, I was never taught by him, but his people he did teach history to, they absolutely loved it. He stood up in the library and recited all sorts of stuff and things. He was very much the old-fashioned housemaster. I don't think I actually got any pastoral care or anything like that. It was in the, where I believe it still is, Wrens and things.
Yes, just downstairs from where we are now.
Indeed. I had a great time, and it was fun being housemaster again of the house many years later for about a year.
Yes, it was very brief, wasn't it, when you were housemaster Wrens? But yeah. Did that sort of mean more to you because you had been a boy in that house?
Yeah, I think it did. Yes, it was just amusing. but then a boarding house came up and I was offered that.
I'm sure we'll come on to that in a moment. The one thing that we were always told on the grapevine when I was a pupil and you were undermaster was that you hadn't been perfectly behaved when you were a pupil. Now, I don't know if that was a vicious rumour. We like to think that you understood us because you had a past as one of the boys.
There was an element of truth in it, yes. There was a shooting of a person who was in charge of the CTF, standing on Grant's steps. And let's say I was certainly not holding the air rifle, but I was around.
So it was this guilt by association?
It was guilt by association, yes. I must say I agreed with it, because I thought the idea of crawling around Dean's Yard in khaki uniform holding a Lee Enfield rifle was a bit old-fashioned. I didn't particularly enjoy that and managed to get thrown out of the CCF very early. So I did the Duke of Edinburgh Award instead. But No, apart from that, it was not too bad.
That was the episode I had in mind. I
did know when I was headmaster and when I was undermaster where all the pupils would be going to have their cigarettes at lunchtime and things. I knew where that would be.
Very useful. What about the other areas of school life that you involved in? Did you play fives as well?
I played fives a lot and was got really keen on it and things. And I thought it was just a fantastic game. I mean, it was just inspiring to be. And the courts were only, I think, there just in my last 2 years or so, because they'd been, they had been originally in where the old Sarge block was, where the art block is now. And then they'd moved to just outside in the main Little Dean's yard. But then they got put into Ashburnham Garden and things. And it was great to have a sport right on site, which one could enjoy. And they did play football. I was a goalkeeper and things, and which meant I could go to sleep at the back. And things, and
if you had a good defence.
Indeed. But no, I loved that, and I went on with it later and things. And, great game. And I did sort of things like small bits of drama and things. I remember being in King Lear. My brother was Conroy, I think, or Regan, and someone called Simon Parkinson Smith, whose father, Norman Parkinson, was a photographer, was Cordelia. Can't remember who was King Lear, but that was directed by Stephen Lushington. But no, I mean, there were great things like that, and I just enjoyed being part of the school. I mean, I think it was a problem that one was pushed through so quickly and things, and that I was quite young compared to my contemporaries and things. And I'd left university when I was still 20 and things, so, which again, I was a bit young.
Of course, you went to Christchurch,
yeah.
And with the traditional historic link between Westminster and Christchurch, was that part of the reason, or was it because your brother had gone there as well?
My brother had gone there and things, and in those appalling days, one had closed awards and things, and so I got my closed exhibition there and things. I'm not sure how these things pan out. It tends to be teachers advising you to do things, and so someone obviously advised me to go to Oxford. I got no idea in those days about Oxford or Cambridge. And I had to think very hard about what I was going to read there, but eventually I decided to read maths and things, which was the right decision. It's great.
Did you enjoy your time at Christchurch? Was
yeah, I did. Again, I took part in a drama, and there was a recently a celebration of the anniversary of Alice in Wonderland, the writing of it, and we also performed it 50 years ago in Christchurch Meadow, which was fantastic fun. What else did I do that? I don't know. I played table tennis for my college. Didn't do anything else sporting for my college, but table tennis was enough. But it was just wonderful being right by the meadow and things, and so you could wander down. And two of the years I was actually in the college and things, in wonderful rooms and things. And I had a great tutor called Handel Davis, a fantastic maths tutor. And very strange, I think. I mean, I think it's still quite similar. In that one took mods after 1 year, and then the next 2 years was until finals, and no test in between. Therefore, it's quite difficult to force oneself to do any work in the second year, but I managed to do a bit. Always annoyed that I was told by Handel Davis that I, when I got a second, it was all right because I got the second. in those days, you couldn't get a 2-1 or a 2-2. You either got a first, second, third, or fourth. And I got my second.
And then you went, if I remember right, to work for the Coal Board.
I did.
Is that straight from Christchurch?
Indeed, operational research, and therefore lots of maths in there. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was an extraordinary time because it was operational research and computers and were very new, and as a result, I even went into sort of board meetings with Robins to talk about various things to do with what I'd found out, and the length of time it takes coal to go down the bands from the front, from the face in the coal, and you know, the idea of actually going down coal mines and things in South Wales, in Ystrad Manoc, which is where the management was, and I used to spend basically every weekdays in South Wales, then moved to Scotland and spent weekdays there. It was extraordinary to be part of that, but it was very frustrating because one was going basically to coal mines to find out whether the coal mine should close or not, and therefore one wasn't very popular when one arrived. And after about a year of being, you know, rather unpopular, I decided give this up, and so I just resigned. And I thought, what am I going to do now? God, I've been out of work for 3 months. I haven't got any money. So the obvious thing to do, certainly then and probably still, is if you're a mathematician, you can be a teacher. And so, and certainly in those days, and still to some extent, you didn't actually have to have any training. So I just applied to be a math teacher and went to Dulwich College. And again, amazingly, became head of computing almost immediately because I was the only person who actually knew anything about computing in those days, and taught there for about 2.5-3 years. And it was a fantastic place then because it was a half a local authority school, so 50%, even though it was a private school, 50% were free places, which made it fantastic, and really bright children, again, going off to Oxbridge to read maths and things. And, so I enjoyed it. But then the head of maths at Westminster School came up, and I applied, and I got it at the age of 25, which was quite young, really. And so I came here at the age of 25 as head of maths.
Had you thought at all consciously about possibly coming back to Westminster before that job?
No, I only went into teaching as a sort of joke. I mean, so that I could write my novel about etc. my time in teaching before I moved on to something else. But I just found I enjoyed it enormously. And so, like all things that you enjoy, you can't be bothered to change. So I stayed in teaching. I mean, it was a bit odd coming back here because, well, I only left about 8 years previously, and therefore most of the staff who had been here when I was a boy were still teachers here and things. And,
I know just what you mean.
indeed.
was that, you know, at all tricky? Because, of course, you came back as a head of department as rather than just as an ordinary subject teacher.
I mean, luckily, the maths teachers seemed to have disappeared, and therefore there weren't any who had taught me or had been here, I don't think, when I was a boy. But there were a lot of other people who obviously were, like legend people like Geoffrey Shepherd and things, and Theo Zinn, and who were all here, and obviously John Ray, who I got to know extremely well as I went through, and I still regularly meet for lunch with Daphne Ray and things. And, no, I mean it was. I mean it was a fun time at Westminster then. I mean, because I think one could start. I think it was the time really when Westminster pupils started to think for themselves. I don't think they'd done so quite previously. I mean, now I would say, and when I was head, that the unique part almost of Westminster School is the fact that the pupils are not content to just sit there in serried rows listening to the teacher. They want to ask, they want to question, they want to give their views. And there were fantastic teachers who used to come in from other schools who were amazing. God, they're questioning whether I'm right. And one says, yes, but you've got to justify your right and things. And I think that started to come about at that sort of stage. And quite honestly, when I was a boy here, I mean, it wasn't that academic a school. I mean, but it just got steadily more and more strength in academia and things.
What would you put that down to, really? Or do you think that was anything to do with John Ray as headmaster? Do you think it was to do with wider social change?
I think it was partly to do with John Ray as headmaster and the importance that he gave to the classroom teaching. I mean, I'd never seen the previous John Carlson walking around the school and going into classes, whereas John Ray regularly used to go into classes and things. And I think he, which was very important to the master, he appointed the very good teachers. And once that atmosphere has been created, then as teachers leave, teachers come, the new teachers get into the habit of wanting pupils to think for themselves, wanting them to question, and that just continues and things. And good schools, I think, have a very much a momentum of their own, and I certainly believe that headmasters don't make that much difference. It's the momentum of the school that really makes a difference.
And then you mentioned a few minutes ago about becoming housemaster of Wrens and then Busby's.
Busby's, yeah.
Was that something you had wanted to do for a while as a sort of move onto the pastoral side?
I mean, not really, I suppose, but one moves on and things. And I'd been head of maths for, I can't remember now, probably 10, 14 years or something like that. And when you're asked to do something, you feel quite honoured, and so you do it and things. And I mean, I found being housemaster of Busby's quite a strain because, you know, you were always on duty permanently and things. And when I went round Busby's initially, I found rather a lot of, shall we say, sort of soft drugs growing in various places and things. And so I had to get rid of those and things, change the atmosphere slightly. I mean, you know, the great advantage of Westminster is that it's a weekly boarding school, although there are pupils who stay at weekends. And sadly, in my, whatever it was, 5 or 6 years in Busby's, there were no weekends when there were no pupils out there. I often used to think on a Saturday night or early Sunday morning that people had not come back. They were due back by 10 o'clock and they were meant to be in by 1 o'clock, by 10, and they weren't there by 1. What should I do? Actually, one just goes to bed and hopes for the best and things. And periodically, one gets Scotland Yard rang, I remember, one night and said, excuse me, sir, we've got two of your lads down here at the yard. I said, yeah, what happened? What were they doing? Well, we found them climbing up the side of the Foreign Office, sir. I said, well, I'm frightfully sorry. I mean, did they do any damage? No, I don't think so. We'll bring them back. You know, things like that happened quite regularly. And it was very much a much more relaxed atmosphere than it is now. I mean, you know, the idea of health and safety and things was, never heard of health and safety. You know, one created a good atmosphere. I remember we started having a Friday night film and things, which was great and things, till I showed that film about Cornwall and things and all sorts of murders and things, and it turned out that one of the mothers was on the British Board of Film Censors and had been appalled her child had been allowed to see this film. I mean, that apart, I mean, it was, you know, the pupils were incredibly well behaved and very determined. It was great in my last year or so that there were girls, boarding girls, up at in the roof. and that was fun to have that. Yeah, it was a good time. Then I became undermaster.
That's how I still picture you, I have to say, Tristan.
And I had a vague reputation of being a bit fierce.
You were. when you became undermaster, it was the time when that role was split from Master
right.
Queen Scholars.
Yeah.
And then previously
yeah.
Jim had been both,
and then I think Jim actually wanted to stop being it, because I think for a year he was still in college and I was undermaster. And then I can't quite remember who took over from Jim, but...
Jonathan? What was that? Was there someone in between? Anyway.
You could well be right, yes. I can't remember.
Was there any awkwardness at all with sort of creating what was in effect a sort of new defined role?
I don't think so, no. I mean, it was, I saw it very much as being around the school, getting to know the pupils better. In other words, obviously, one knew the pupils in one's own house and one taught, but as undermaster, one had a responsibility for everyone and things. And it was also very much, you know, sort of discussing with the headmaster policy things and being part of the senior management team. But it was, I mean, in those days there was less of the idea of senior management teams, and it was very much individuals doing their own job. And I mean, Westminster's always been a bit on the borderline of, you know, pupils behaving well and things. I mean, I remember as headmaster, all the governors used to go on about the fact that the pupils had their shirts hanging out, and I took note but really didn't care very much whether they had their shirts hanging out, that there were much more important things in how they behaved. I was glad to see the other day that they still all had their shirts hanging out. I mean, I don't think it is easy in the centre of London, because it's very easy for pupils to find other things that they can do which perhaps they shouldn't be doing, and therefore to keep you know, the appropriate atmosphere of reasonable behaviour and having a set of rules which people basically go by. I mean, it takes quite a lot of hard work and things, and I think it is important to have a framework so that pupils are much more likely to be happy if they know where they are, and they don't feel they can go too far in different directions. So I try to very much create that atmosphere at the same time as still teaching and still enjoying teaching.
Well, I remember that very much, because I think you were still teaching a huge amount as undermaster, and that wouldn't happen now because so much time gets blocked from other things.
Even as headmaster, I was doing 12 periods a week. I mean,
which now seems extraordinary.
Yeah,
I think, you know, even a few years later. But that clearly, for you, was a huge part of that job as undermaster and as headmaster, still to be very much a teacher as well.
Oh, very much so. And, you know, I'd known all the heads of maths. I mean, Eddie Smith took over from me as head of maths, and then Michael Davis, who's still here and things, and we were all, I was sadly at the funeral of the previous head of maths, a man called Michael Hugill, about 3 or 4 years ago, I think. So there haven't been many heads of maths since 1970. So yes, I mean that's basically, to me, is the teaching is all about what being part of a school is about, and the administration is essential and important, but it's not the part that I enjoy particularly.
Of course, I'm in danger of getting rather sort of personal here, because you taught me when I was in the fifth form, and you know, when you were talking earlier about inspiring maths teachers, I had this image of you actually. You worked as hard, you know. I have to say, we learned a huge amount in that 1 year with you. Was that a conscious thing to force the pace in a way that I think some of my lower school teachers probably didn't in certain subjects?
I think it's important in the sense that I certainly found it, I suppose because the pace had been forced on me as a child, and things that I really enjoyed, you know, learning new things, having to think, and you know, there were some classes, as you described, that I can remember being in where one just sort of sat back and feeling slightly bored and things, and that's not what education is about. It's about being excited, and one should be studying math not because somebody says that math is important. One should study math because one loves it, because it's inspiring, because it's exciting. I still think that as I teach further math tomorrow. So yes, very much so. And it's been great to have, you know, had various people saying how much they enjoyed the lessons or inspired. There was a great sculptor who was recently has produced a fantastic sculpture, which has been placed near to St Pancras in a building, I can't remember the name of it, but he's the youngest person to be part of the member of the Royal Academy and things. And but he mentioned in an article that his mathematical type sculptures is inspired by my teaching and things. Or even one of your present governors the other day said, what did you? She most remember about Westminster School, and Anita Day said being taught math by me. So yeah, I mean, that feeling that people did enjoy some of one's math lessons and feel that they learnt things, I mean, was really important. Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, maybe it was because you wanted to avoid having another 2 years of teaching me, but you then left Westminster for Emmanuel in 1984.
Yeah.
That must have been quite a change for you after being here for so long.
It was a big change, but like all things, one doesn't get bored of doing things, but one wants new challenges, I think. And again, I'd been under master for a certain number of years, and I applied for one or two schools. I almost got boarding college school, but then didn't, and then I got Emmanuel School, which again was an exciting school because there were masses of assisted places. There were more assisted places there than any other school in the country. And there were a lot of young people from, you know, Brixton area and things, and it was inspiring to keep them going. I mean, it wasn't that academic when I went there. And all the sixth form, for example, had to play rugby, and therefore they all left, and so I immediately cancelled that. And I think even in the sort of 3 years or so I was there, that one did manage to improve the standard of the academic standard of the manual. Now it's a fantastic school, and the thing that I did, which shocked the old boys and things, was they stopped the assisted places, and therefore we'd have gone bankrupt. But apart from that, I always think it's a good idea to be co-educational, and so I took in girls at Emmanuel and things, and that was the saviour of Emmanuel then, but also I think now, in the sense that it's a fantastic place with both boys and girls. Stuck in the middle of the railway lines, and some of them saved some people in the Clapham rail crash and things. And I mean, you know, Westminster isn't co-educational, but it is in the sixth form, and I think that could be the ideal, because perhaps at the age of 14, 15, perhaps boys and girls should be educated separately. But the idea that they're educated separately at 16, I think, is appalling. I mean, the idea of reading Romeo and Juliet and only having a male input, I mean, it's just, you can't possibly do that. And also you've got to get used to the idea of university, and it was very good for the boys because they suddenly discovered that girls weren't people you met at parties but were actually much brighter than them and things. And no, I mean, it was great. And John Ray started that, I think, probably because he had five daughters and things and had to educate them somewhere. And so he started taking in girls. It just went from strength to strength, and still is, obviously. I think it increased the number of boarding places, I think.
I remember John Ray saying about his first headship in Taunton that, you know, he went in there with a job to do, and there was a lot of change involved, and so it was inevitably going to be a short tenure, and then he'd move on. Was that in any way how you felt about Emmanuel, with all those changes you've mentioned?
To some extent, yes. I mean, I thought it was unlikely that I'd stay at Emmanuel very long, partly because I lived in Oxford, and I had to basically commute from Oxford to Emmanuel, which was a hell of a commute, and therefore that was getting quite a strain. But no, it wasn't the intention when I went there by any means. I mean, but again, these things happen, and Headmaster of Westminster came up. I didn't apply for it. But then a governor rang me up and said, could you apply? And so I did as I was told, and applied. They'd obviously found nobody else, and so I don't know whether that's true, but anyway, I was asked to apply rather than applying.
Did you have any misgivings about the idea of coming back in a different role so soon?
Yes, slight misgivings, undoubtedly. I mean, partly again because I'd been a fellow teacher with a large number of the teachers, and I was then going to be headmaster, and therefore quite difficult to keep one's distance from people one had known very well and things, which obviously to some extent one has to do as a headmaster. So yes, indeed, and there were all sorts of things that terrified me. I mean, the idea of chanting Pater Noster, Quaes in Silis, when I can't really sing, in front of the whole school, slightly nerve-wracking, giving sermons and things, and I think the commemoration sermons must have been the most nerve-wracking thing, but I remember one, there were masses of complaints, because it was soon after 9/11, and but I just felt very strongly then that really we hadn't reacted as countries as to why this had happened, and so I said that if I had been a young boy or perhaps Bangladeshi Pakistani origin living in Peckham in those days, that I would have had a picture of Osama bin Laden on the wall. There were interesting reactions, but at least one of the senior canon said that thank God for a sermon which actually makes you think. So they were interesting times, giving things like sermons and things in the Abbey. And, but, you know, I mean, again, I think I had to be marginally tough in the beginning because I think to some extent things have been let slide. But I do think it's in order, as I say, to have a happy place, you have to have a system of rules in place. And I just feel so strongly that you can never, for example, have no bullying in a school, but you want to just try and reduce the amount of bullying however much you can, so that basically all pupils have a happy time. And at Westminster it's quite tough because, you know, they're all bright at Westminster, but inevitably if you're all bright you're still going to have ones at the bottom of the pack, and you've got to make sure that they have a good time as well, and that they feel excited and they don't feel that it's all too academic for them. And I try to work hard on that. And the other big thing I was very determined as a headmaster and did as Emmanuel was that sometimes headmasters just sit in their studies and never appear. You have to be out and about talking to the pupils. But even more important, almost, is talking to the work staff, talking to the people in the school store, talking to the people who run College Hall and things. And I think that's just so important to making them feel part of the school, because otherwise sometimes they feel separated from the school. And that was something I sort of was very determined to do, and I think did do. But I mean, Westminster is just an extraordinarily exciting school to be at. I mean, because you're a boarding school, semi-boarding school in the middle of London. It's got the great advantage that MPs are only 2 minutes away, and so they're happy to come to John Locke, and pupils feel part of the they feel part of the whole life of the country, because the demonstrations, you can hear people shouting and screaming at the Iraq demonstrations, and I had to prevent myself from going and joining in, but several pupils certainly did go, and I couldn't encourage them, and told them they shouldn't be there, but I mean, I think it's very good that they wanted to be there. And yet, one is set in these most amazingly quiet and beautiful surroundings of Dean's Yard and Little Dean's Yard, and it's just fantastic. I think the main thing that really excited me, which I think that I started, was the getting pupils who couldn't otherwise, parents who couldn't otherwise afford the fees to come to Westminster. And I spent a lot of time initially going around the local primary schools, getting in with the heads there, and getting them to believe that their bright children might come to Westminster. And we started off the system, and they came 2 years at Westminster Under School, and then 5 years here. And we were up to, when I left, about 6 or 7 a year coming in. Like, that's not much, but it's very tough to find the money, and I didn't raise the funds as a fund, because I thought I'd be dead by the time I managed it. So I went out to individual Westminsters and got them to agree to pay for somebody for 7 years, and we had to get it right. I mean, Michael Davis was very good at helping to find the right pupils, because they've got to be bright, as well as their parents not able to afford the fees. And I think we got it right. We got it right. We never got it wrong. They were always bright, the ones that we got. And probably about one or two of the ones that came into Westminster and school out of the six or seven got Queen scholarships. And so we did get it right. And it was wonderful hearing the ones that, you know, were finishing when I was finishing and things, and that how much they enjoyed their time and how much they got out of the place. I do think that's, you know, so important that, that one does that, and that there is more opportunity for pupils who parents can't afford to have really good education. And the thing that I regretted, I suppose, was that I perhaps I didn't work hard enough with the Abbey and things, and therefore I didn't really get the Abbey involved in the school as much as I wanted to, and didn't get the thing through I wanted to. I wanted the Westminster to be part of an academy, but then the governors were very much against the idea and wouldn't have any of it, and I'm very pleased now that that's changed and that there's an academy around the corner, which is associated very strongly with Westminster. I also often was asked whether we could open a Westminster school in Thailand or in China or in, we couldn't possibly give our name to something like that. I said, well, we get lots of money out of it. But they still weren't having any. That was sad. I almost persuaded the Abbey to allow us to have a underground gym underneath in the middle of Dean's Yard. But eventually that went against it.
It's interesting you mention that, because one of the things that struck me most when I came back, and I missed out on your headmastership, really, but when I came back, the school did seem, as you've said, a much, much kinder, more caring place than it had been. But also, of course, the amazing transformation in terms of facilities and these buildings.
Well, I was, of course, very lucky. In other words, when I'd almost just arrived, it became £42 million. From the Disney, I persuaded the governors, although I think they've changed their minds now, to put half of it into a bursary fund, and the other half went towards new buildings. I also spent a lot of time with the development office raising money from individuals, and it was amazing that during my time the Manukian Music Centre opened. Mr. Manukian being the parent, and was very generous, and then the Western building opened, and the I've now forgotten the name, Millicent Fawcett Hall Theatre opened. All those three places opened during my time. I mean, I'm not one really for thinking that schools like Westminster need more and more new buildings, but I mean, basically, it particularly needed the Western building because the school was getting bigger and bigger. The science block had been created some years earlier, the new science block, and that was very needed, much needed. The theatre was just fantastic compared to having everything up school. And the Millicent Fawcett Hall, I mean, previously the music facilities had been appalling, but now the Manukian building has made all the difference. So it's enabled pupils not only to be bright and academic and things, but also to do a lot more about the place. And Westminster's special. I mean, Vincent Square's their place. I mean, how many schools have got enormous, great, don't know how many acres it is, but right in the middle of London and only a 10-minute walk from the school. People have often said the cricket pitch there is one of the best cricket pitches in the UK. Fantastic. And, okay, you've got to go down to Putney to do your rowing, but I mean, that again is pretty easy to do. And I mean, Westminster used to have a reputation of, you know, not having been very sporty and things, but I think that over the years that's been changed, and almost did very well, didn't we, in the head of the river recently, I think.
Second year running.
And just failed to win. No, I think, well, that's important to have that going on. There were interesting times, undoubtedly, when I was head. Overall, I certainly enjoyed it very much. It's very good being a head because, for example, I mean, it was wonderful. I very much believe that pupils need a second chance, and quite often, I think during my time, there must have been about four or five pupils expelled from various schools like Charterhouse and Winchester and the City of London, who I gave a second chance to, because, you know, at the age of 14, 15, if you do something wrong, then you can't have it always on your back and things. And it was, as a headmaster, you can do that. Obviously, they have to be bright enough, but you can still take them in.
When you first started as headmaster, you sort of suggested that obviously you had your own views of some of those you've known very well as colleagues. Do you think that perhaps the staff, and indeed the pupils, by sort of hearsay, had a bit of a set view of you?
Yep.
And what you were going to be like?
Yes, I think they probably thought that I was going to be frightfully tough and things. And at the end of the first year, there was a famous sort of mini riot and things. And the remove, I can't quite remember the words, but I can't actually say them, I don't think, in public, which were written on the top of Ashburnham House. I confronted them all and things, and eventually they all started laughing and things, and it was all okay. And after that one event, I mean, I think then pupils did realise that there was a purpose about one being tough, and that underneath the toughness was really a pleasant person who actually cared about how they did and things, and therefore they saw through any sort of toughness and things. And so after the first year, which was marginally difficult, the remaining years were extremely straightforward and things as far as that was concerned, in that basically pupils were well behaved, and which is great, and so then gives them the opportunity to expand what they can do. I enjoyed it, but again, I suppose when I retired marginally early, I think at the age of 58, I thought, I've been a headmaster now for about 10 years, that's about time to move on and let somebody else do it and things, which I think people were quite surprised that I did decide to retire 2 years early. But I was able to do other things, like be manager of the Oxfordshire Further Maths Centre and go and teach in state schools and things, and, which was great.
Was that story, of course, in the paper when we were told that they didn't want you teaching in the state sector because you were not a qualified teacher?
Indeed.
Which must have come as a bit of a...
Well, it wasn't a surprise, but I got round it by being employed by Oxford University, and the schools paid Oxford University for my teaching, and therefore I was not employed by the state schools. But I did go to virtually every state school in Oxfordshire teaching further math, which was fantastic. Really exciting getting to know pupils who had frankly not had very good math teaching, perhaps not had pupils who could, teachers who could stretch them and things, and teaching, two or three pupils in each of those schools further maths, and then going on to Oxbridge, Imperial College or whatever, was great. It really was. And I'm still teaching now, and taught in most schools in Oxford, and at the moment I'm teaching in a school in Hampton Court. At some point, perhaps before my 70th birthday, I will probably retire.
The other thing in the media recently where you featured was the changing of the school timings for the day at Hampton Court.
That is at Hampton Court, yes. I mean, because as most of us know who've taught pupils at the age of 16 or 17, 9 o'clock in the morning, they're looking completely
Saturday morning,
particularly, they're looking completely knackered and totally unable to take anything in. And so we started this idea of the school day starting at 1:30 for the sixth form and going on till 7 o'clock. And this has been happening for these last two terms and seems to have been successful. It's had a lot of publicity and there's been a lot of research done, particularly in Oxford, about the circadian rhythms of people of that age, and getting a young person of, say, 16, 17, up at 7 o'clock in the morning to get to school by 8:30 is equivalent of getting me, say, up at 4 o'clock in the morning, which obviously I wouldn't be too keen on. I think it has worked. And I mean, a lot of schools are thinking of starting slightly later for the sixth form, not as late as we are. And certainly at university, for example, I mean, several of the Oxford departments, the lectures no longer start at 9 o'clock in the morning, they start at 10 o'clock, because they just found the undergraduates weren't getting to the lectures at 9 o'clock in the morning. And but people used to say, I mean, when we started doing it, oh, we were just pandering to these lazy people. But it's, you know, it's just not true. It changes, and by the time you're 22, 23, you're back in the system of when you were a child, that you can get up in the morning and things. And, you know, been a lot of depression produced by, one's told, by children being very tired, particularly nowadays when they've got their iPads and they're never off their iPads. So at 11 o'clock at night, they're still on their iPads and they can't get off them, and the fact they've had the bright lights mean they can't go to sleep anyway, so they're not getting to sleep till 1 o'clock in the morning. So I think it's worth trying.
I wonder if we should try it here.
Indeed. Slightly more difficult, but with a boarding school as well. We could certainly try a bit of it. But yes, so that's been interesting, undoubtedly. Never before appeared on breakfast television.
A clip was circulated in the common room, I have to say.
but it was quite amusing, certainly. But no, I mean, there were wonderful moments at Westminster. Can I think of any other good moments? I think the main thing is the exciting part of the pupils at Westminster. A lot of schools, you can say, you know, the pupils come out, a particular type of pupil from the school. At Westminster, they're all different and things. And they go on to do fantastic careers. And as you know, I mean, most of the people that one sees on the television who are reporting from Iraq or some appalling place are all Westminsters and things. I mean, it's extraordinary how many go into journalism. Obviously, quite a few go into business and things, but they do go into very varied careers. And as I found and things, I can remember sitting with Andrew Lloyd Webber at the end of the first year, and he just failed his prelims, and he thought, shall I come back? And I can remember saying to him, for God's sake, you've got to come back. You'll never make any money out of writing musicals. He did leave Oxford after a year. He did make the obvious money from doing musicals. But there were, you know, masses of old Westminsters who one keeps on bumping into. There is an awesome one. Comes back here, sadly.
It's terrible.
But the only time recently I've been back really is for memorial services, which is sad and things. And Jim Cogan and Willie Booth. Yes, well,
what have we not covered?
I think one of the things that really came through in the interview was your sense of social responsibility. You mentioned a lot about assisted places and wanting more bursaries at a school like Westminster. And we finished up talking about you teaching in state schools. And I wondered how you felt about being at a school like Westminster, and whether that was ever a difficult thing for you to be in a place where there is a lot of privilege, or whether you thought there was an important role to be played here?
I mean, I every so often I've thought, yes, absolutely, what am I doing here at Westminster, which is, you know, loads of rich parents sending their children here. But I mean, in fact, those children often need more looking after than your normal child, because, frankly, a lot of these really rich children, they send them off to Westminster and that's it. They expect the school to look after them. But I suppose in the end it was completely selfish, in that I love teaching mathematics. I love teaching reasonably difficult mathematics or further math. I love teaching children who want to learn. And you're much more likely to do that at an independent school. Sure, you can do that at a lot of grammar schools and academies as well. I'm a governor, used to be a governor of three or four different academies. I'm now only a governor of one academy in the Walworth Road. But it's, you know, it's really exciting being there and seeing the difference it can make. You know, just the difference, for example, of not closing the school at 3:15, which means that at 3:15 everybody can go off and just do anything, join gangs, etc., etc. There, they've got a lot going on after school. They've got sport, they've got activities, which it means that the children do find that school is meaningful to them. So yes, I mean, I wanted to do my bit as much as I could whilst being completely selfish and teaching in a very pleasant atmosphere, I think.
One of the things I've often heard commented about was, you know, you're giving very memorable addresses in Abbey to the school, and often talking about things that, you know, interested you personally and your own political opinions. And I've heard a lot about you talking about visits to Cuba. I know that's really stuck with some former pupils.
Well, I mean, basically, it's partly that I used to every year go cycling in some hot part of the world, and as something to do in the first sermon was talk about where I'd just been. And my father had been a great pal of Castro and things, and I loved going to Cuba, and I loved going to somewhere called Laos, which most people have not heard of. But and therefore, I used to say, you know, you think that communist countries are appalling places. I think they're great places, and both Laos and Cuba, communist places. And they, you know, just telling them about the normal life of the individuals in Cuba, in Laos, that sure, some people have suffered in Cuba by, if they've rebelled and things, but if you're going to be in that part of the world, wouldn't you prefer to be living in Cuba than living in the slums of Rio or the slums of Kingston? I mean, basically, in Cuba, nobody is rich apart from the odd communist hierarchy, but the rest of the people, they have reasonable housing, they have food, their children have a fantastic education, and they've got a fantastic health service. And similarly with Laos. I mean, Laos is meant to be a sort of incredibly poor country, in a way it is, but yet the people in the villages, they grow their own food, they have a very happy time, they are Buddhist, which I think is the best religion there is, because it's part of the whole society. Bhutan, I think, is a wonderful country. Therefore, I mean, it was always a bit odd my giving lots of sermons in Westminster Abbey, because I can't claim to be a great Christian believer. Religious believer, perhaps, but not necessarily Christian. I do think Buddhism has got a lot to be said for it, because they don't have a god in Buddhism. But yes, I mean, because perhaps I wasn't a great believer, I didn't start off with a quote from the Bible when I was giving my sermons, but just talked about something that I believed in and hoped that to get the pupils to think about. And I mean, it was wonderful at Westminster again that we can go to the Abbey. I don't know what you do now, but we did three mornings a week in my time. And even if pupils don't believe, they can still sit there in the most beautiful surroundings and just look up at the roof of the Abbey and be inspired for the whole day. They don't actually have to listen to me giving sermons, but they can be inspired. And it was really important to me that everybody should be part of it. I mean, as Emmanuel, when I went there, used to be separated out. The people who were Jewish or Muslim used to leave the assemblies. And then the Christian bit came in, and I stopped that, and I just had a combined service for everybody, because one wants to be completely inclusive, and I just think that's really important. So yes, the sermons weren't straight down the line, undoubtedly. They were fun.
I suppose one other thing we didn't really touch on was school expeditions, which you were very involved in for a long time.
I was, very much so. I mean, I can remember one most terrifying time in Skye, I'd been sent off with a group of about 7 or 8 pupils. We ended up in the mist. We'd no idea where we were, and I didn't know what to do. And, should I leave them there and find the way? Or eventually I led them off and things. But I used to go with Jim Cogan, who was a fantastic person to go on expeditions with, and he used to just send me off into the middle of nowhere. Now I did a lot of walking, and I think I've done about 200 of the Munros in my time. And that was a great advantage of there being no health and safety. In that nowadays, I believe that you can hardly do this, that you have to take people to expedition centres and things, whereas in my day as headmaster, and certainly when I was a teacher here, we used to just take them off to Skye. People like Cedric Harbin, John Field used to, and Eddie Smith. And take them up mountains and things. And I can remember being with Jim Cogan one day, and came down a mountain in the Lake District, and we found that we were one short. And so I had to race back up and find this child. And luckily, it was we didn't lose him. It was John Le Carre, one of John Le Carre's children. that wouldn't have been a good idea to lose him, but we didn't. I think the fact that you could have all those sort of different expeditions, like cycling expeditions that we had and things, I mean, they were much more exciting because they were run by individual members of staff who were following their own passions. And whereas now, I think they're a bit sort of too organised and lacking inspiration.
It's now all about paperwork.
Indeed, and making sure that you've done whatever it is before they go. I can't remember.
You're a qualified mountain guide.
You're a qualified mountain guide, yes. And I must admit that I used to, even as headmaster, tend to throw into the waste bin all the stuff about health and safety and things. When I was told that we had to produce I can't even remember what they're called now, but it's when children go out, it's possible dangers that they may face.
Risk assessment.
Risk assessment is the word. And that we should do a risk assessment of pupils going to Vincent Square. And all I said was a risk assessment is they might get run over, but if they haven't got any sense, they won't. I mean, you know, it's just so ridiculous. As most risk assessments are. but, you know, I don't think any more pupils have been affected before risk assessment is asked for risk. You always get disasters, and it's just incredibly sad. I think probably even more important is that you've got an individual looking after a few pupils, and therefore they know who they are, etc., etc. But yes, I love the expedition. Sadly, I haven't climbed a mountain for a few years now.
I wonder if you think, we talked about it a little bit in the interview, new technology and computers coming into schools, whether you think that is a good thing, or whether it's perhaps had some role to play in the increasing bureaucracy that we contend with now?
I think obviously you've got to have computers in schools and things, but I mean, I think it's really important you do teach children how to program, and too often children aren't taught how to do that. All they can do is play games on their laptop or whatever. And the important thing, which I have done recently at the schools that I've been teaching at, is teach them how to write these games and things, talk to them about the fact that, you know, that thing called matrices in mathematics and things, which people don't learn about very much these days, but they're all to do with, you need matrices to have games, programs and things, and have real control over things as they zoom around the screen. So I think the main thing is, yeah, I think the idea of the government in bringing in these strange little computers and things has been a really good idea. Teaching them how to write apps and things so they can make their fortune. But obviously, I didn't have to contend with the horrors, and it is horrors in my view, of children bullying each other on Facebook. And previously, if they have been unhappy or whatever, they can go home. But now, you know, God knows why, they go on Facebook again and they're being attacked and things. And I just think it's so horrible. And all this sort of pornography that they can get on computers is just horrible. I think in my day there was something called Health Magazine or whatever, which was just the odd lady showing a little bit and thing when I was 13 or 14, and that was the maximum excitement one was going to get. But now, God knows, don't want to know about all that horrors that they, and that is something which I'm very glad I don't have to contend with now. It must be a real problem.
We talked about girls coming to the school, but I suppose one of the other big changes was an increasing number of women teaching in the school.
Absolutely, which has been great. I don't think that there have been any women housemasters or boys' houses. Debbie Harris was, but she was of a girls' house.
Frances Ramsey, of course.
Of course she was in college. Of course she was, yes. Indeed.
We've got two currently, soon to be three.
Very good, fantastic. No, I think that's it's really good. I mean, it's really important that pupils have both boys, men and women as teachers and things. And Jackie Coburn did a fantastic job about bringing history of art into the school and things. And there have been several really impressive people. And Frances Ramsey is fantastic. There's been some very good maths. Women teachers and things in my time. Really important that happens, that it's completely both boys and girls in the sixth form and men and women teachers, yeah, very much so.
I was going to get very nostalgic at this point. Okay. Start talking about being in room 23.
Room 23 was at the top of the...
That was your well, then maths room.
Was it? At the top of Ashwell?
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't go in there without having slight palpitations, actually, still.
No. I mean, it was exciting. I used to love, when I was headmaster, teaching the bottom set in the upper shell and things, and getting them better results than the set above and things, which was really exciting. And
it's very competitive.
Very competitive. It's extraordinary how, you know, pupils in bottom sets in maths, half of them were getting A stars in maths and things, even though they were in the bottom set. And that's a terrifying thing these days, is that... I would imagine that unless you get sort of 8 A stars here, you haven't done very well and things, and which is rather frightening. And unless you get 3 or 4 A stars at A level, then Cambridge or whatever won't even consider you. I've always liked the fact that in recent years there have been AS levels, and that a lot of schools doubting that they think the summer term should be spent playing cricket or whatever, but I think it should be spent doing some work as well. And it's much easier for pupils of the age of 16, 17 to realise they're going to have an exam each year, rather than thinking I'm not going to have an exam for 2 years. So certainly at Hampton Court we've kept AS levels, even though in most subjects they're not part of the A2s. Has Westminster got rid of all AS levels?
Well, we're changing, so yeah. the subjects where the new syllabus has come in, we've got rid of the AS.
Yeah.
In history we're not doing AS this year for the first time.
Which is fine if you've got experienced teachers, it's quite tough if you haven't and things, and because you don't necessarily know where you are. Yes, I mean, I used to love teaching up there, it was both the all levels from 13 up and things. And the manual I used to teach them at the age of 11, and at Dulwich I did, I don't think I could manage any younger than that.
Well, we were very lucky, because I think by the end of the fifth form, we certainly knew enough maths to swan through all our public exams for the next few years.
Good.
But then I dropped maths, so I shouldn't really be talking about this. Sorry about that.
you obviously knew enough. I think that's the important thing, is to get people to enjoy it, to be excited by it. If they are, then even if they don't continue with it, they'll look back on it with interest and things.
The question you asked me, which I was never able to answer at the time, and I'm still not quite sure what the answer was meant to be, was you once, right in the middle of a lesson, you just turned to me and you said, still surnames in those days, you said, Ed, how do you make a flower bed very beautiful? No idea.
You put two stakes in the ground and you get a piece of string and you attach one end to each, and then you get another stick and you pull out the string in a very tight format and you drag the stick round, and keeping the string tight, and you end up with an ellipse, and you end up with an elliptical flower bed, which is very beautiful.
Well, you are. There was, I think it was all about the golden ratio or something.
Fibonacci numbers.
Fibonacci numbers. No, it was ellipses. Very good.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Lovely to see you.
Lots of other things we're going to think of later, but
we'll always come back and do another.